Right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go. This episode is sponsored by Feather Snack. Okay, hold on, y'all. I have to tell you about something that my wife got us into and that my whole family is loving now. Brace yourselves. It's the Feather Snap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. Yes, I said bird feeder. This thing is so cool, and it offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn about the birds right in your own backyard. Or, if you're like us, living in New York City, it's in your friend's backyard in the country, and you get to use the app connected to it to learn all the stuff. It's got this high-resolution camera that connects to an app, so you can check out a live stream from your feeder. You can take photos and videos of the birds that visit. You can ID the species using expert-trained AI, and you can earn badges along the way. You can even, y'all, learn fun facts about hundreds of species. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces? And they can even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I know that now. Did you? Seriously, the Feather Snap Feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just a whole bunch of fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. Hey folks, are you in NYC for Pride? You need to come see a live taping of If These Ovaries Could Talk, If So. This show is in partnership with WNYC at the Green Space, and the special guest is stand-up comic Jessica Kirsten. She is amazing. You need to see this. The show is on June 10th at 7 p.m. For tickets, go to ovariestalk.com and click the live events button.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. We are happy to have them on board.
Yes, we are.
Woohoo!
Hello, hello.
Welcome to If These Ovaries Could Talk.
Hi, guys. I'm Jamie.
I'm Robin.
We're your hosts.
And
as always,
we have, oh my God, like we have like almost a continuation of last week this week.
We do.
It's like a John Oliver title.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, but it's a continuation because last week we spoke with a woman who works
Sheila
at the foster
from Graham agency,
who we love. And this week it's a couple who actually fostered.
Yes.
So
we wanted to say before we get into it. Mm-hmm. So obviously we post the episode on Facebook in our communities and other LGBTQ groups mm-hmm. to try to like get the word out about the podcast, but also to share with people who want to hear this, right? And you know, we posted that we were dispelling the myth that LGBTQ people can't foster.
Right.
And I got a little flack for my posting from someone named James Finn, which I appreciate.
Yeah. Thank you, James.
Yeah. James said,
his
quote was that LGBTQ people are practically excluded from fostering and adopting in some parts of the U.S. is a fact, not a myth. I think your post is irresponsible in not acknowledging that. You shouldn't be calling reality a myth, though I am certainly all in with your efforts to encourage fostering. So, mm-hmm. you know, thanks, James. It's a good point.
It's
a very valid
point.
We're a little in the bubble here in New York. And, yeah. you know, I mean, we did only speak to the one agency who is obviously very open to LGBTQ folks. But
right.
what we're hearing from you is it's not that way for everyone.
The rest of the, I actually also just saw a post in one of the lesbian communities that I'm mm-hmm. a part of on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I didn't comment on it. I wanted to, but I didn't.
What did they say?
They said they had just had their first discriminatory experience.
In foster care?
In foster care. They had just gotten married. They were excited. They've always wanted to foster. And I don't remember where they were. I feel like it was Texas. But they said that she was on the phone with a foster agency just asking about how to get started. And the woman asked, well, what does your husband do? And she mm-hmm. said, well, actually my wife, blah, blah, blah. And then the lady on the other end of the phone got very tight-lipped Ooh. And it got very awkward. And then basically the conversation ended.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah. So it's not easy everywhere.
Yeah. But then we have Crystal and our Angels episode from season two. Mm-hmm. They were in a very small town in Texas and they were very out about being LGBTQ and they had a great experience. So right. I guess it's maybe agency by agency and
it's yeah. Like check the agencies yeah. by you and see. And so we still have a long way
to
come.
Yeah. The fight's not over.
So thanks for that. Thanks. James. It's a good point.
Yeah. It's really good to hear that. Cause you know, sometimes we're putting things out in like our bubble and it's nice to hear that as well.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, thanks for that.
Anywho, you know what is what? Coming up in 3 weeks, Jamie?
Oh, what though? What?
Geez, what's coming up in 3 weeks? Is it our live show at the Green Space?
Be.
People, get the tickets now.
If you guys have not gotten your tickets Mm-mm, yet, I'm crazy. Very disappointed in you.
You just got all mom like there.
I did.
I just You're going to have a consequence. I was disappointed in them this weekend.
If I get home tonight and there are not some tickets bought,
I mean,
there will be consequences. There will be no more screen time.
We told our kids that we were disappointed in them because they didn't acknowledge Mother's Day for either one of us after both of us separately told them,
oh.
like, guys, just even if you just say, I'll listen to you today, that would have been the greatest gift.
Oh, my God.
Nothing. I think I went a little hard, though. Like, Maxine was crying. I was like, Oops. Oh, I was like, just turn it around. It's 7:30 in the morning. Just be good.
We had it. It was our Mother's Day. Mother's Day is hard. Crappy. Oh, man. It rained all day, too. So,
all right. Well, 3 weeks to our show. Get the tickets. Go to ovariestalk.com. And there's like a little tab. You just click in there. It says live show. And you can get your tickets there.
Yeah. Make this part of your Pride events.
This is Pride Month, June in New York.
World Pride. World Pride.
All right. Part two of foster care. We're talking to Jess and Holly, a couple who fostered, and they had a little bit of a tough road. So we're going to hear, we heard a lot of the good stuff last week, the support from Graham, but now we're going to hear like some of the reality. Should we bring them in?
Which is highs and lows.
Yeah, highs and lows.
You know, and they're beautiful.
Oh, let's share it, right?
Everything I say gets weird to you, Robin.
A little bit.
Can we just bring them in? I think they'll appreciate.
Okay. Hi, Jess and Holly.
Hi there.
Oh my gosh. Welcome.
Welcome.
We are so excited to have you guys here. So, ladies, we start everybody with the elevator pitch.
And
like if you were riding the elevator with someone, how would you tell about your family?
Very little
while
time
in the elevator.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to get off of this.
And each of you has to do it.
Okay.
Your own.
Okay.
All right. Who's going first?
Okay.
Jessica. So I'm Jessica Sydney Jackson. Mm-hmm. I used to be an actress, and I am terrified of the mic all of a sudden, and I have been for over 20 years since my time on the mic. So I became a speech therapist and met the beautiful Holly Smeltzer during a fight. We were arguing.
Mm-hmm. Sweet. What were you guys arguing about?
Space, because I was—
Personal space?
Oh, no. I wouldn't Outer argue space. About that with that one. I mean, she's a looker. We were arguing over space because I was working with kids, putting on performances.
Uh-huh.
And her, at the time, she was the site director of the after school program.
Oh.
And so they were fighting for the same space.
You were like, I have the gym on Tuesday at 4.
You're right. It was the gymatorium.
Of course, it's always the gym.
The gymatorium.
Was it a school in the city?
No, in Brooklyn.
Uh-huh.
Yes, in Brooklyn.
Uh-huh.
Also, I've never heard gymatorium before.
Yeah, it becomes an auditorium when they set up the folding chairs.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's still called a gym. Okay, so you were arguing over space, you met, and you fell in love.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That
and
quickly.
Yeah, well, not so quickly. I had to wear her down a little.
And then we went on a first date. Yes. I'm not trying to steal
no,
your time.
No,
we went on a first date. Well, I thought it was a first date. She did not necessarily think it was a first date.
That's true.
Oh. Yeah.
You were just trying to get
but
the gym space.
By the end of the evening, we both knew.
Yeah.
Because you're making out.
Yeah.
Well,
almost.
Not yet.
Well, you took it slow for lesbians.
They had moved in, but they had not made out.
Exactly. Right. We already planned our whole future.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, had the kids baby and everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And then we kissed. So then we moved in together, really, as our older daughter says. I think Holly came over one time and then never left, which was the real lesbian way to do it. Yeah, and so we just started our family after that.
How did you start your family?
Well, I have a 13-year-old daughter, 14-year-old daughter.
Oh, my gosh.
A 14-year-old daughter.
That you had when you were 16, because you look.
I don't even understand this.
So she was from a previous relationship, mm-hmm. and she lives with her mom.
Okay.
And Hal and I started to talk about being foster parents, hoping to adopt, and that's how it happened.
Well, we have to hear Holly's elevator version.
That was a very long elevator pitch.
So I'm sorry about that. Every story.
She's been sitting so patiently.
She's like, I'd like a turn, please.
Yeah. I feel like she really wants to chime in here.
So, about the gymatorium.
It was your space, wasn't it?
Well, it turns out it was my space, but only for like $2 a day. So it got a little heated in the principal's office.
Oh my gosh.
No, but really, I've always wanted to adopt. And we just talked about how, you know, we wanted to have our family non-traditionally. Right. And adoption was always a way. And we decided to foster, which was a pretty crazy thing to do.
What made you decide to foster? Like, instead of going the traditional, I mean, I guess more traditional of adoption.
Well, just adoption is as public, almost public servants, adoption is out of our budget range.
Yes.
Yeah. Got it. So we decided, I guess we decided to try fostering to adopt, but not just fostering to adopt, but fostering to also help grow our family and help support our community.
Right.
Right.
So
it's amazing.
Good people.
So we just recertified for our fourth year. Or third year.
I think third year. Yeah.
So to kind of like speed up a little bit, once we decided we were going to foster, we went to an ACS foster fair.
Right. Uh-huh.
It was like a fair.
Exactly. We wanted to know what the process was. How do you find which agency to go with? Just all of it. We didn't know anything. And we walked in looking the way we look, except Hal used to like, you know, do her hair up much higher. And my hair, yeah.
Did you have a little faux hawk? You had a little faux hawk action?
Yeah, a little faux hawk, a little this, a little that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can pull that off.
I had to tame it down a little bit.
So we walked in there and it was very traditional looking, you know, moms and dads together. Mm-hmm. I think the most like untraditional or non-traditional looking person there was like a grandmother, you know, figure.
Oh, there was like a grandma.
Yeah, there were some like single parents there who wanted to find out some information. But then we walked in and we looked at each other and immediately like, there is no chance anyone's going to talk to us.
Oh, wow. Were you nervous going in about the gay thing?
Yes, 100%. Mm-hmm. But we figured, let's just see what happens. You know, at least we can say at least we tried.
Did you know any other LGBTQ families who are fostering? Like, or you were just like...
Not here.
Yeah, not here.
Our friends in Seattle do, but... Mm-hmm.
So you weren't sure if
and,
it would fly.
Yeah, and we didn't even know that the agencies had to be LGBTQ affirming. Like, we didn't even know that's a thing. That was a thing.
Right.
Right.
Huh.
So we walked in and we watched the whole pitch, the whole video, and we were sitting on these really beautiful chairs, really comfy. Believe it or not, we were surprised by the chairs. That really surprised us.
Like, that's the second time you brought the chairs up. So.
Yeah. What are you saying? Are these leather? And eventually they took away the beautiful chairs and they said, okay, now
mingle.
Yeah, try to find an agency to sign up with. And there were all of these tables set up and Holly and I were like, oh man, this is so overwhelming. And we started laughing because everyone was lined up. They looked so prepared. Like they really knew who they wanted to sign up.
They knew where to go.
Yeah, they knew. And we didn't know. And
I could just see you two like standing in the middle of the room.
Exactly.
And I have you in my head holding like one of those giveaway bags, you know, those like duffels. It says like adoption agency. And you're both like.
pretty much.
It got like competitive. And we were like, okay, look, we're just trying to talk to people and get to know like mm-hmm. what the agencies are about.
Right. And the process. Yeah. I think more than anything, yeah. we really just wanted to know the process
yeah.
and what the chances would be. But as we were standing there, just whispering to each other and laughing because we were so nervous and we were thinking, what are we doing here? What the hell are we doing here? Someone from Catholic Charities were, girl, hey girl, you sweeties need to come over here. And we're like, what? Is that guy talking to us from Catholic Charities?
Catholic Charities. This is
you're like, you know, we're together.
Right. Exactly. And then someone came over and said, no, they're coming to us next. They're coming to us first.
Oh. And so everybody wants the gays.
Yeah, everyone wanted the gays. Mm-hmm.
Everybody wanted the two moms.
Did you get any sense? Yes. Why was it the two moms thing? Or did you get any sense of just you seem sad?
Well, they felt bad for us. They're like, come you know on, what? Come maybe someone us. Needs to adopt the two of you. You know what? Over time, we found out that they really love the gays mm-hmm. and they really need the gays.
And why is that?
Well, we found out that a lot of kids are actually kicked out of their homes because they identify, right?
Right.
Or because even if they're questioning, you know, even if they're not really sure themselves, mm-hmm. If they are exploring who they are and their identity, they very often are chastised or they're abused into conforming mm-hmm. or just kicked out.
Even in New York City.
I know.
It's just something you don't think, but obviously, of course, there's all walks of people here, you know.
Yeah.
All walks of life.
So yeah, they wanted us and we were surprised. But also I think during the process, I realized as we've had kiddos come and stay with us that the kids are really used to a non-traditional mm-hmm. life.
Right.
You know, so many of the kids come to us and unfortunately, we've had a couple of kids who have had multiple homes. So for them, they've stacked up the amount of moms they've had. You know, in their mind, they've had five. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. In their mind, they've had six moms, five moms. Ugh. So to say you're going to a home with two moms is...
Right.
We actually had one kiddo come with us and she was really attached to her mom right before us. By the time she came to us, we were the fifth home in a 2-year span.
Yeah, 2 years.
Oh my God.
She had been to five homes. When she came to us, we were thinking, man, what a shocker. She lived in this gorgeous apartment in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a beautiful apartment. And the mom was very nice. And she came to us. And as we got to know her, she became a little bit more comfortable. We asked her, so... how did you feel when you found out you were coming to a home with two moms? Did that make you nervous? She said, no. But when I heard you had a dog, that's what got her. She's like, yes, a home with a dog. Oh, that was the thing that got her. Yeah, she didn't care that there were two moms. Also, the kids themselves are pretty much non-traditional, right?
Right.
I mean, just when they're sitting in the classrooms, they have a story like no one else has.
Yep.
So for them... having two moms, I mean, for some of them, they're craving. And so many of them are craving mothers. You know, they want so much. Exactly. So I think that's why the agencies really, really love having the gays.
That's good to know.
Going back to the fair, like how did you narrow down an agency? You wandered about and then just... You maybe didn't pick one there?
Because clearly you were well-liked.
In demand.
That's what
I'm You know, we actually did pick one there.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. So I actually work for a foster care agency.
Oh.
But I work in like a youth development program. Mm-hmm. So okay. I don't work with the foster care department except for to make referrals and that type of stuff. But we just kind of mingled around the tables and got pulled back and forth. And we eventually ended up settling with the agency that we settled with. And I think that really what it came down to was talking to the person who was at the table.
Right.
Because, you know, for us, connections and talking really mm-hmm. is a lot, and like the intuition. And we hadn't really done a lot of research on the different organizations before we got there. Mm-hmm. And so we were kind of really banking on the interactions that we had. And we felt like whoever was presenting was a representation of the agency.
Right. Yeah.
And we just really connected. And we still really connect and really appreciate the lady who... I guess, onboarded us.
Shout out to Ann Reed.
What? Robin, mm-hmm. we talk a little bit about therapy on this podcast.
A little bit. Mm-hmm. Actually, a lot.
Yeah, yeah. And what stops you from getting help, Robin?
I mean, so many reasons. No, but honestly, it's just, it's really hard to find someone. Mm-hmm. And then I've got to find the time to schedule it. And it's like, you know, when you're already in like not a great place emotionally, I think those are things that can just make it too much to navigate. You know what I'm saying?
No, I know. I do. But, and we've talked about that. Yep. But also we have a new sponsor. BetterHelp.
Right.
And it's basically online therapy, is like what you're all about.
Love BetterHelp.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think it's such a fabulous idea mm-hmm. to be able to sign up online, which we know I love, but then mm-hmm. they get like a snapshot of what's going on with me. And then they match me up with a licensed professional therapist. And basically within a day, I could start chatting with a therapist. Mm-hmm. Like that's huge.
It really is. And I think it's also really important just to clarify that BetterHelp isn't a crisis line
right.
or a self-help group, which I can't mm-hmm. handle. Mm-hmm. It's actually professional counseling that you can do securely online.
I think, and mm-hmm. we know this about me, that the online part is like revolutionary.
I know.
I mean, I could do meetings online. I can call my family on a video chat. Mm-hmm. Like, why not therapy? Mm-hmm. And then there's no like hour to commute or that like awkward wait in the lobby.
Right.
Are you going in there?
Awkward wait.
I hate that wait in the lobby.
I know you do.
I do.
But listen, I just really appreciate that they have a ton of all these different counselors with all different types of expertise. So mm-hmm. the cool thing is you can say that you want someone who specializes in LGBTQ issues or is LGBTQ friendly.
Yes. You know? Mm-hmm. And another cool feature that you can use like with your online account, you could send a message to your counselor mm-hmm. and then that you can get a timely and thoughtful response. And that's like in addition to being able to schedule weekly video and phone sessions. Mm-hmm. Like that's awesome.
And BetterHelp is committed to helping you find the right counselor. So if you start off with someone and the vibe is just not right, which totally happens, right? You can easily change mm-hmm. and get this, it's free.
Amazing.
I know. And their prices also, get this, are cheaper mm-hmm. than regular in-office therapists. And
what?
There's more? They have financial aid.
Ugh, Jamie, it's like BetterHelp wants you to get help.
I know.
I'm just saying.
I know. I think we all need it. So,
but anyone out there who thinks they'd like to find someone to talk to, just visit betterhelp.com/OCT and you could join the over 500,000 people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional.
And our listeners get 10% off your first month if you visit betterhelp.com/OCT.
Do it.
Get it.
So I have a question. When you were talking about the kiddos coming in and then going out,
right.
do you get to say, I would like something more permanent or something more short? Or you just get...
She's laughing. Holly's laughing. Yeah.
So when we first started fostering, we thankfully, our friends in Seattle told us that we need to have like a list of questions that we need to ask. Mm-hmm. Like things that might be red flags for our family. We also promised our daughter Suki that we would never have anyone in our home that was older than her.
Yeah. Oh. Because she wants to be the boss. You know, that'd be kind of rough to have somebody come in older than her.
She's 13.
That's a good point. Right. Yeah.
Well, we had a list of things that we asked, just making sure that
requirements almost.
Yeah. So for example, if I could give one. Yeah. So because we have a dog, mm-hmm. it's really important to us that we have a kiddo that doesn't have a history of hurting animals.
Got it. So just boundaries, really.
Right. So, we just go down the list and ask things, anything from like medications to allergies. So
hard to think of everything, right? Yeah. How do you make that
I
list?
I bet you add to the list over time.
That's exactly what happened. Yeah. We had a list and then we just kept adding to it whenever we would get calls.
But typically they only have answers to maybe, if we're lucky, half of the answers,
right.
the questions on the list, because they don't know full history. A kid just came into care last night at midnight and they call us at like, you know, 8:30 in the morning. They're like, can you take this kid? And it happens pretty quickly. So it's really hard. And we can ask questions like, you know, is the kid legally freed in the state, which means that they would be able to be up for adoption mm-hmm. soon. But most of the kids who are in care aren't, and they're not on track. And especially now with the Family First Prevention Services Act that was passed last February.
Like, talk to us about, don't know what that is.
Okay, so.
We just learned about it ourselves.
And I just know because I just, I'm in grad school, so I just wrote a paper about it.
Oh, good. So you can really give us the lowdown.
So basically it is working to keep kids in the home mm-hmm. rather like through like parent skill building mm-hmm. and more like heavy duty preventive services mm-hmm. so that the kiddos can stay in their home. Even if there are drugs present, they will still work to keep the kids mm-hmm. in the home, mm-hmm. which, you know, I'm just talking about it and not really saying what I agree with. So the preventive services, but then also there's like another half of it that talks about just like group homes and like long-term treatment facilities. Right. But
aren't they moving away from group homes?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So that is like a huge part of it. And the most of the bill is talking about like the funding streams and just like states will get funded in an easier way if they keep kids in the home. So basically getting rewarded in some way for that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard because it's like you would want the parents to get help so that they could keep their kids. Cause right. I mean, that's gotta be best, but it's like, there's drugs in the home.
Right. I feel like it's multi-tiered. I think in part it's because they don't have enough foster homes for the kiddos, and the nationwide, the move is towards reunification always.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So instead of removing the kiddo from home and then placing them with a foster family, and then maybe another foster family and another and another, just to put them back in their birth home. And then it's just so traumatic. Really, it's so traumatic to see all of the moves. It gets to a point where some of the kids are just, it's so hard to kind of penetrate that wall of
Because they're like, how long am I going to be here with you?
Right, mm-hmm. exactly. So even though it makes me crazy, the idea of how many opportunities the birth parents have when... I mean, I don't know if that was the right or wrong thing to say. Okay, let me just put it out there like that and say it for real. I don't know if that's right or wrong. Uh-huh. But the truth is, like, if I'm going to keep it funky here, they get a lot of opportunities, mm-hmm. so many, because the courts really want the reunification to happen. And mm-hmm. we understand it because there's so much attachment there, right? But the idea of the kids leaving is so traumatic, and then leaving the families that they come to know, mm-hmm. it's heartbreaking. It really is heartbreaking.
So you got your license,
right?
You're ready to foster, and then what happened?
You know? So we got,
we wait.
Yeah, we waited. Home, right? We got a call that we did not take these kiddos,
right?
And it turned out to be like a really tragic. We just had a weird feeling just about mm-hmm. the situation, and we said no. That was our first call.
It was more than one. It was siblings.
Yeah, there were mm-hmm. two kiddos, a one-year-old and a two-year-old.
And we said no just because we just didn't really feel, something didn't feel right. And one of the sweet babies ended up passing away right after she went into a foster home.
Oh, my goodness.
And it just like... I mean, like we still think mm-hmm. about that and talk about that moment and just
that could have been with you.
Yeah.
But after that, we were like, okay, so let's just see what happens. We'll kind of take it as it comes. And then we got a call for an 8-month-old baby, mm-hmm. and we said yes right away.
Yeah,
we just knew right away.
We threw out that list of questions. Yeah. We didn't even know her name. We said yes. Because when they call you, they don't tell you very much.
They just say,
you
don't know. An 8-month-old.
Right. You don't know.
A home right away.
Right. And so you ask the gender, the age, because you have to make sure you're certified for whatever age or gender that they are trying to place. And then that's it. You don't know the ethnicity. You don't know the religious background. You don't know mm-hmm. anything unless you ask. But we just said yes. We didn't. And then as we were about to hang up, oh, wait. What's her name? We didn't even know who should we be accepting with open arms, because we didn't know and we were so ready for uh-huh. anyone to come.
So from the moment when you say yes, how quickly does that baby come to you?
She came to us the next day.
Yeah.
We said yes at night.
It's usually like a day almost.
She had a situation. She was at another foster home before she came to us, and she got hurt. So they were... just making sure that she was okay. So mm-hmm. she went to the hospital. So she ended up coming the next afternoon. And it was pretty much my biggest work day of the entire year, our spring festival.
It always welcome to parents.
Right, exactly.
Welcome to
Of course
mom.
It was.
It totally was. So I went, Jess waited. And
then we spent some time with her and she took a nap. And that's when you left for the festival.
Wow.
But what a flurry, right? Yeah, I know.
All I remember is a minivan pulling up and them turning around and pulling this beautiful, beautiful baby out of a minivan.
Yeah.
And just literally falling in love in that exact moment.
Yeah.
and just grabbing her. And seriously, I can't, just the amount of love that it came into my body and my heart in that moment was just, I can't describe it.
Meant to be. You were on the right path.
It was pretty amazing.
What, what's her name?
Bella.
Bella.
Yeah, which is so perfect, right?
Mm-hmm. Bella.
Yeah.
Sweet Bella.
And so when they handed her to you, what was she like? You know,
a feather. She was 8 months old, but she was like swimming in a onesie that was for 0 to 3 months. She was swimming in it. She was only 13 pounds, super duper light. Huge eyes. Oh. She was so like welcoming. She came to us without crying.
Wow.
And the two of us,
as we're crying.
We start tearing up. And she just came right to us, but it was so sad. She didn't know how to respond to her name or anything. She was just so willing, you know? And so that was the first moment. And then we introduced ourselves to the people who brought her because we didn't know.
Yeah, you're like, give me that baby.
Exactly.
Hand her over.
Exactly.
How long do they stay with you? Are they just like, here's the baby, beep, beep, and they take off? Or do they sit with you for a little bit?
Bye, guys. Good luck.
You got this.
Yeah.
You did the training, right?
Right.
They don't stay too long. They come in and like check to see where she's going to sleep. Even though we have like our home study, you have to have an annual home study done. And they just like check to make sure there's food. And make sure there's beds for...
They have to have like a room. You have to have a room for that?
Yeah.
Well, not for... I think it's a 0 to 3 or 2 years, 11 months. They can stay in the room with you and then they have to go into another room.
And that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
My 17-month-old is still in the room with us.
Yeah.
No judgment.
So Bella came to us and... It was such a beautiful spring day and she was such a sweet baby, but like Jess said earlier, she really had a hard time connecting and even she couldn't sit up. We did like belly time with her and she absolutely, I know that like a lot of babies hate it, but she absolutely hated it, but she really just didn't have any... like grasp
motor skills.
She literally every single meal for over a year and a half was a fight. And just like getting her to swallow. All she wanted to do was to drink milk and she had an allergy. And so when she came to us, she was on soy milk. Well, right. We didn't know.
We had to figure that out.
But we ended up switching her to cow's milk. Yeah. Yep. So she,
diarrhea,
or not cow's milk,
up.
Goat's milk. Yeah. And every time that we would try like oatmeal, you know, the soft baby oatmeal, she would gag. And so it was, and then she was 13 pounds. We're trying to get her,
trying to get her weight
out
up,
of 0 to 3 month onesies and trying to get her to hold some food down. And then on top of that, trying to get her early intervention services, which we were pretty sure she needed OT, occupational therapy, and physical therapy. Mm-hmm. And thankfully for Jess for really understanding that system and literally not taking no for an answer. How long did it take
us? Were they saying you didn't qualify for services?
We couldn't get an answer. We literally couldn't get someone to come to our house and evaluate her. Much red tape.
Yeah. And that's, by the way, I hear that in the public school system too.
Yeah.
Not just in foster care. People who think their kid needs services and you have to get that covered.
You have to be so diligent.
Yeah. Right. And I know other parents who've been like, just won't, like they get a no diagnosis and they say, no, you will give my kid services and that.
Right.
So in Belle's case, the pediatrician was just like, I don't understand this. The previous home she was in, there was no motoric development happening. She really needed as much help as possible. So I don't know why she wasn't evaluated sooner.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just strange that she was 8 months old and not doing any of these things yet.
So only drinking milk. That was it.
Right.
Well, that's probably why. It was one of the reasons she wasn't putting weight on. She was only drinking milk.
Well, we found out too that she was pretty much put, I guess, in one of these swings. In the doorway.
Mm-hmm. Oh, like the jumpers?
Yeah, I guess so.
Oh, jeez. They're not supposed to be that young, though.
Or some kind of swing or something.
Yeah.
But they said that the bottle was propped up around her with blankets.
Oh.
She was held very rarely. So we were told. So she just didn't have any of the motor development. So we started watching her and noticed that she had a weakness on the right side of her body.
Mm-hmm.
So then we really pushed it and we told the pediatrician and she said, yeah, let's try all these things. Amazing pediatrician which we found out happens with the kids who are in care. They see pediatricians who are a part of the foster agency. Oh. It's very cool. I mean, it's really amazing. They have their own set of dentists and pediatricians.
Oh, that's
and,
nice to know. That's yeah, like a that great
are,
support system.
That are in the know about yeah. the foster, about their particular
possible issues, I would assume.
Right. Yeah. And I guess, and they share like the same kind of like database or files, so they know everything that's happening, all the visits that happen. It's
that is like the best communication in foster care, I think, is that aspect of
it. I never thought of that about that, because otherwise
they should.
Every house they went to, they would go see a new different doctor who has no history of
And I imagine the amount of files that would get lost. That's that's brilliant.
So it's amazing, especially in the system where they go through so many case planners. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's nice that the doctors are pretty much the same people that they see, or the nurse practitioners. Mm-hmm. But so, yeah, she basically pushed it forward and she said, you know, I'm kind of concerned. I'm wondering if she had a stroke while in utero.
Oh.
I know. And so we're like, what? Well, then maybe we can.
I don't know if that's possible.
I know. Yeah. Well, apparently it is. I called up EI and said, hey, so they think the baby may have cerebral palsy caused from a stroke while in utero. Immediately, they came. Immediately after that. But it was after like 6 months of sending back and forth questionnaires and surveys to EI. And then finally it came through.
But when we had to be diligent. You have to, you know, like so you just want your baby to be helped.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing too about having gays as parents, as foster parents. I mean, we're used to fighting, right?
Right.
We're used
right.
to fighting for the things that we need, and fighting for our families, and fighting for recognition and visibility and all of those things, right?
Yeah.
To move out from the margins. So I think that's another reason why it's really important for the gays to foster. Yeah, I think it really is, because we fight and advocate more than maybe, you know, I don't want to say the average. Non-traditional or traditional. Folks. Yeah, the regular.
Those cisgender.
Yeah, exactly. So those heteros.
Got care for her at that point?
Yeah. So we got care. We ended up with two incredible providers, an occupational therapist and a physical therapist.
Amazing. And we're still friends with them.
We're still friends with them. Mm-hmm. They are truly incredible humans. And she received the care basically the entire time that she was with us. So she ended up staying with us for just shy of 2 years. We went on trips. We went to Maine. We went to Vermont. We actually were asking her mom if we could go to Europe with her. And we had just about got a yes. And so we were so excited. We were going to get her a passport. And
She was thriving now.
She was thriving.
Yeah, she was. She was walking. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She was jumping. I mean, I know those sound like little things,
no,
but when you
not
get those
all.
Early intervention goals, where it's something like, I mean, when we look at the videos of her now and we say, oh my gosh, look at how she was holding the spoon and she was turning and her wrist. It's amazing.
She literally never crawled. She did a one-arm scoot.
Yeah.
She did. She like never,
the other arm was a little weak.
Yeah. So she never crawled. But throughout the time, I kind of jumped ahead, throughout the time that she was with us, the goal changed from return to parent to adoption.
Sure. And that's the goal for you, or that was
that's
the goal?
That's her permanency goal.
Oh, okay, so that's like what the agency sets up. Or
right,
what the,
while she was with us.
Yeah, while she was with us.
They kind of monitor. You have to have these meetings every few months to see how the kiddo's doing, how they're doing in the placement with you, how they're achieving goals and all of that other good stuff. Mm-hmm. And how the parent is doing. And if they see that they're not making progress within a certain amount of time, we've been told that if it's like 15 to 22 months, they start the process of terminating parental rights.
And that comes through the court.
Yeah,
so the family treatment conferences are what happen every 6 months.
Yeah.
And then there's permanency hearings that happen in Brooklyn Family Court. And so we ended up going to a permanency hearing, or Belle's caseworker and her attorney, because Bella has her own attorney. Mm-hmm. They went and made a case that mom wasn't making as much progress as she needed to. And so they started the process of terminating her rights and also changed the goal to adoption.
Mm-hmm. And the mom knows this.
Yes.
She may not like it, but she knows that's what's happening.
Yes.
Right. And so we always tried to make sure to say, look, we want to maintain this relationship. You know, this is not about us keeping Belle for ourselves. You know, we know
open.
How important, right? Yeah. It's so important that she knows the full scope of everyone in her family.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And like really, truly being open to that, knowing that that could mean anything,
right? Yeah.
But still being willing to take that, because ultimately she's who brought the reason that Bella came into our lives.
Right.
So. But you want to adopt her.
Yeah. Yes.
That's what you want to happen.
Yeah. We think it's the safest place for her to be. And I mean, we just adore her. We love her. She's our baby.
So
fast forward again, February 14th, 2017, we got a call and...
Sorry, 18.
It was 2018, yeah.
Last year, February.
Of 2018, we got a call and they said basically ACS failed to prove neglect.
On the initial charge.
On the first charge, like when Belle entered when the system, they failed to prove neglect. Not saying that
there
was no neglect, they just failed to prove it. And therefore, every single thing that happened after that day didn't matter.
Didn't matter. You started all over again.
So they said, Bella's probably leaving tomorrow to go back to her mom.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
So,
did the mom get a lawyer?
The mom had a lawyer. She, oddly enough, the lawyer who filed the petition for everything to be overturned, she apparently fired him. So it was odd because it took so long through the courts for it to come through. And it turns out that the lawyer that she had at that moment wasn't even the one who filed the petition. She had some pretty hardworking lawyers.
So the agency, who I have to say was incredible throughout those 48 hours, they tried to file along with Bella's attorney, because Bella's attorney wanted Bella to be adopted because she's looking for, in her mind, Bella's best interest.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So they filed a petition to stay, which just basically would mean that Bella could stay with us until they had a chance to retry the initial charges. I think that's my understanding of it, more or less.
Yeah, she still hasn't met the level of what would be acceptable, but that doesn't matter because there's no proof of neglect. Right.
Yeah, right. So because... on that charge, when it got dismissed, no judge dissented. They all agreed that it wasn't... And that... So basically, they said no. And so on the day after, on the 16th, Bella left us in the morning.
Yeah.
And it was like...
How that's terrible.
Yeah. Right? And it was... I mean, the thing is that we have our feelings and our trauma and our sadness and our grief. But really, the thing that really gets us is thinking about hers and
the loss that she suffered. Yeah.
So, and literally, we packed up every single thing that we could of hers because we didn't know what was going to happen. And we spoke to her one time on the phone about 2 days later, but we haven't seen or spoken to her other than that because her mom doesn't want us to be there for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Are you able to keep tabs on her through the agency?
No. So once, in a usual case, what would happen is, since reunification is the goal, it would be like a kind of like a weaning off process.
Yeah.
So that they spend like 1 day with a parent, then 2 days, and then like a whole weekend, Friday to Monday, or, you know, on and on. But because the charge was overturned, everything was immediate and it was as if it didn't happen. So there are no tabs kept on her legally. The agency was amazing because they really tried to offer every kind of transitional service that they normally offer parents. I think it's like for a year or two, they offer transitional services after reunification to really support that process so that
to support the birth mother.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that the kiddo doesn't end up back in care. But Bella's mom refused everything.
Right, and she doesn't have to take
it. And she didn't have to.
Because, again, there was no neglect.
And how old is Bella now?
She's 3. She went to a facility, so we weren't expecting that.
She went to a rehab.
Yeah.
It's like a mama and me rehab. So, yeah.
So, if you can't keep tabs on her, how do you know there's a possibility you could be reunited? Or is that just like you're just putting this out to the universe?
Well, it's a combination of kind of like, I guess, statistics and us putting it out into the universe just in case.
But I mean, how would you, like ACS, like let's say,
yeah,
God forbid they have to take her out, or I don't know, maybe that's the good thing we're wishing for at this point. They have to take her out, right? How do you know ACS would place her with you?
We don't but even we know don't. If ACS will place her with the same agency.
Right.
But the chances are if they see that she was with Graham, they will ask Graham if they would take her again.
Mm-hmm. Can you keep checking in with ACS?
Bella's attorney is absolutely phenomenal. And so she knows she to knows kind of have does. Like-
And so she's keep, still representing Belle.
To keep, right. And if Belle comes back into the system, she would represent her right. again. And so that would be the key. I think that Belle's attorney is the key to all of this.
Right.
Uh-huh. So you're putting this out in the universe, but you can't live in that space, like emotionally, right? You-
How do you,
where are
how
you?
You?
Like, how are you? Pros-
now?
Yeah,
how do you move
therapy.
Yeah,
we all need therapy.
Therapy is amazing. Right now.
I mean, I was choking up. I couldn't even like talk for a little while there because I don't know how you.
My jaw hurts because I'm so stressed out for you right now.
I don't know how you move forward with this, and I think you're both incredibly strong, resilient people.
We're really not. I mean, if you saw us just a few months ago, we literally just made the decision to say, okay, look, we lived like a year of hell basically, and unless people go through it, they really don't understand. So many mm-hmm. people are saying you'll foster again, yeah. or don't ever do this again.
You're like, none of that's helpful to me.
Right. Or come on, one of you just have a baby. Come on, or why don't you guys just adopt? Because people really don't know how expensive adoption is. Yeah. You know, people just want to help so much and mm-hmm. say the right thing and
right
not see us in pain, but really, it's such a painful process. It would have been, as we've said, because you really have to be aware that reunification is the goal, right, primarily. Yeah. So we didn't go into it thinking that a miracle would happen, you know, and they would say, you get a baby and you get a baby. We knew that there was going to come a time when
they
would
warn you.
Right, they tell you.
You have to have thick skin.
Because- yeah, they say, love this baby like she's yours, but know that she isn't.
Yeah. So Sheila talked about that, about how they changed the name from, or want to change the name from foster care to a resource parent because right. to try to help. But I can't imagine that makes a big difference. It's still someone took a baby.
Right. And I think, again, I really feel like it's because the system is so focused on the birth parents. Mm-hmm. So, and honestly, we do believe in this
yeah.
idea that we're supposed to be a resource, a network of support for the birth parents, especially once a kiddo's been with us. Why not? I mean, so that you don't end up in the same situation that you were in before. So let's continue having a communication mm-hmm. and stay involved in each other's lives, especially because your kiddo is with us for however many years or even months. So we understand that idea of use this as a resource. You want to go out? We even said this to Bella's mom. We were sending her text messages. You want to go out on dates? Call us and we'll babysit. You want to hang out with your friends? Call us. We'll babysit.
Does she respond to you?
No, she did in the beginning, but after a while she was just like, listen, I know what to do. You don't need to help.
I can understand if I put myself in her shoes.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah.
It's not a fun truth to realize or think about.
Right.
So we actually ended up hiring an attorney, not to like fight for custody, but we just wanted to see Bella. Mm-hmm. And so that
she was okay because there were no tabs on her.
To know she was okay. Yeah. And also to let her know that she wasn't abandoned.
Right.
And
that
the people that love her and said that they loved her every day, multiple times a day, they were still there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so we ended up in like probably like an 8-month long court situation. And just going back and forth, literally just for visitation.
Just trying
to say, hey, can we see her like once a month and just let her know, you know, the same type of thing. But that we actually ended up having to withdraw the petition.
Because if that would be a precedent setting case, wouldn't it?
It would absolutely
be. Because has that ever been granted?
No.
It's been tried a couple
times.
If
it's kinship, yes, but not if it's...
just a foster.
Right, a third party, as they say.
Yeah. Just because foster parents have no rights.
Right.
Yeah.
And after they've had a child in their home for a year, they gain some rights. But, you know, just the fact that Belle left us, we had no rights. But it was interesting because we've been doing a lot of research. So, you know, all of this trauma and grief, in 2018, our motto was that 2018, a lot of things happened to us. And so we decided it's not the best grammatical phrase, yeah, but we decided that we were going to happen to 2019. And so rather than waiting for stuff to come at us, we were going to go at things. Uh-huh. And so we have been. I mean, we've been really busy. Not to say that we've accomplished a lot, but we
just being able to
be in that mindset,
get through a day without crying.
Yeah,
that was a huge accomplishment.
Yeah,
because we literally told ourselves, okay, once we give up this, we withdraw this petition. We're not necessarily giving it up, let's be honest. Mm-hmm. But we're legally, we're saying, okay, we're just going to have to say to the universe, if we have not received a call from Graham, mm-hmm, then that means she's okay, right?
Yep.
Because the truth of the matter is, when we get a call, that's when we know something bad happened.
Right, right.
So we don't ever want to wish something bad to happen to her. It's such a weird place to be in, right?
Yeah.
So we just have to say, you know what? We didn't get any calls today, so that means that Belle is okay.
Yeah.
That means she may not have, you know, everything. She may not have gymnastics anymore, OT and PT, but you know what? She's okay. That means her mom is really trying. Her mom is doing her best that she can do.
The positive spin on a not-so-positive situation.
Yeah. Well, and we don't want to deter any of your listeners.
Well, we're going to come to a positive side of this.
There's always a silver lining.
Yeah, always.
I feel like you guys find it somehow, no matter what.
We still laugh a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, we do. We make each other laugh a lot. Suki makes us laugh. And we just...
Oh, yeah. Suki's in this whole situation as well. So she had to deal with losing a sister.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to, I mean, besides, you know, that you mentioned that we need more LGBTQ parents, like foster parents, resource parents, whatever you want to call it. What advice would you give to folks who are standing outside the fair like you two once were?
One would be, this is kind of like the boundary limit. Know your limits and really be aware of them. And don't be afraid to say when you've reached your limit.
Yeah, good one.
But on a positive front, you never know how much love that you can be filled with just by having a kid literally pop into your life out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And it really, the amount of love that I have for Bella, it just, I can't even explain it. I will always love her. If we never get to see her again, it just, I want her to always know that she's loved. And so foster care really is full of love, and you get to see kids who have challenges that I could never even dream of having, and they overcome them.
And they're so resilient. And I know.
That is such an incredibly profound thing to see.
Yeah.
And, you know, people would always say that Bella was lucky to have us, and that would really make us crazy.
Yeah.
Because we're like, no, and this is like not meant to be corny, but like truly, we were the lucky ones.
It's because really true.
We got to be blessed by her,
yeah,
you know, energy and her love and her giggles and her hair pulls and whatever she felt like doing.
Yeah, it's really true. And I feel like that's true of any kid who goes into your home. Even if the kiddo's not the right fit for your family, you learn so much about yourself as a parent and as a human being. And to see that this little person, whatever age, has gone through so much more than you could probably even imagine. Mm-hmm. And that they're still walking and talking and willing to love someone is incredible.
Yeah,
I mean, it's incredible. I think the advice I would give is the idea of trying to reach out to others. Because we really do try to maintain great relationships with as many people with positive attitudes at the agency as possible. Mm. I mean, I've run down hallways saying, excuse me, are you a foster parent?
Yeah.
I mean, we've connected with people that way.
Yeah.
Have made really great friendships with other foster parents. It's so important to try to not do it on your own. Mm. We're really amazed by people who do it as single parents. We're amazed because it's so much. So if you are a single parent, just really try to reach out to other people. It's really important.
Build your community.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really important to be able to talk with people and be surrounded by people who literally may have gone through the same thing just months before you.
Right.
And they get it in a way that other people might not understand it.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to empathize if you've never been through it.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I think the two of you have shown even like, I mean, you're so sweet. We just met you and you're showing all of this empathy.
Crying.
Yeah. You're making a mess over there. Yeah, you have a Kleenex.
You're like, it didn't happen to you, Jamie.
But I think people really do try. It's just really hard to, for someone who hasn't been in it, to give advice on what to do next.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Or how to pick yourself up and keep going.
You're going to, and I'm putting this out into the universe for you guys. You're going to go, you're going to fucking rejuvenate the shit out of yourselves.
Yes.
In like a more positive, less swearing way. And you're going to come back and
swearing. Shit's coming to you. Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it with the swearing. Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
I said that.
Do that 2019, bitch.
That's right. Jimmy. That's right. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I thank you guys for sharing your story because
thanks so much for having us, really.
There has to be other people who now don't feel so alone because you shared that story.
We hope so. And if that's true, we hope we meet them. We don't know any other.
Well, listen, we're going to.
Besides the ones in Seattle, our friends in Seattle. Right.
When we put this out there, we will put your social media handles and people should feel free to, you know, we'll tag you everywhere and anywhere. And people could also reach out
to us
at ovariestalk@gmail.com.
And we actually do get a lot of people more and more so lately who are writing in. And
that
would be amazing.
So we'll connect you.
Thanks for letting the laughs come out too. Cause I know it was so heavy and
that's how we do.
So thank you so much. Really. Yeah.
Yeah. It was really nice.
Oh,
that was, whew.
Wow.
That was a roller coaster.
Yeah.
I'm getting that baby back for them, though. I'm telling you.
I know you are.
I'm fucking getting that baby back for them.
On a mission.
I'm starting Google Docs right now, and I'm getting that baby back.
Oh, it's such a tough situation.
It really is.
Such a tough situation. I can't imagine losing my baby.
But you know what I think is really exciting is they didn't talk about it here, but we talked about it with them after they left. They want to become activists and they were talking about this, Belgium and how they have this system where foster parents can retain some visitation rights and they want to work on that toward a system here. And I just think it's great that they're going to take their break and come back they're not quitting.
No, they're working it out for themselves.
Yeah,
working it out. And they're lovely people.
Lovely ladies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
On another note,
3 weeks to our live
show. 3 weeks, people. Come I can't believe us. You haven't bought the ticket yet. You should have bought it as soon
June
as we said it earlier.
At the Green Space, tickets are at ovariestalk.com. Go get those tickets.
Yeah. Feel free to reach out like our friend James did in the beginning. You can email us at ovariestalk@gmail.com. You can Instagram us at ovaries_talk. And that we are on the Facebook, If These Ovaries Could Talk. And Twitter at Ovaries Talk.
So many places to get
so many. I feel like we have to just add more.
Too many.
We're going to have to get Snapchat and get up with the kids.
No.
I don't even understand how that works.
Slack. No. Just say no.
I don't even know.
And thank you to our sponsor, BetterHelp.
Thank you, BetterHelp.
Jamie's going to get some BetterHelp.
I am.
And she's going to be better.
I need help.
I need a lot of help.
I need so much help.
Jamie,
don't you guys need help?
Let's say goodbye and go get some help.
But in the form of a margarita. I'm just kidding.
Eggs, that was British. British eggs, ovaries,
out.
If these ovaries could talk, they would say, eggs, ovaries, out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.